I'm going to shut down the chat box because honestly, I can't take a lot of all these windows, and I have a lot of them now. And so I'm going to ask that you just sort of hang with me because I would like to talk to you about what I call integrating our life experience into our story. I'm going to click back and forth from this screen. Okay. Well, it was. There it is. And a lovely shot of Catalina Island in the back there. So we'll just get this adjusted. So I'll probably go back and forth, but I wanted to talk about this is kind of how it works, and this is why we do it, and this is what we mostly do for our clients, is it not? So let's start with this. Integrating your life experience into your story is something you just do. All of us do that. And so my important question to you is, what's your story? Because that's exactly the person that we're helping. But it does start with us, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. So I am just going to say that I'm going to come back to my screen back and forth, okay? So thanks for listening and hanging with me on that. So what's your story? Indeed, each of us has a story. Some of us have more than one story, in case you have noticed that about yourself. I have at least one. And I want to say that story to me is a narrative that we create to explain things to ourselves. And sometimes to others, but mostly to ourselves. And it can also be used as a way to justify our decisions and our actions that we've taken. It could be our very own theme song, if we want it to be, or allow it, or are not very mindful about it. And how we integrate that life experience and create our story is what I want to talk more about today, briefly. Let's talk about the life experience for a moment. Whether you see life experience as a paradigm of adventuring, or just experiencing, or researching, or maybe just visiting, or something else entirely I didn't even mention, the idea of gathering up a lifetime of experiences and making meaning from them while we're here is not only human, but it's unavoidable. And it's the very thing most of our clients are wrestling with. And that's why we help them. I'm going to go back to the share. As you can tell, these drawings were made for me by my frequent collaborator, Angela Treat Lyon. And she understands I'm a child. At heart, I'm a child. So let's talk about our human design. Our design is to integrate what happens to us, right? So I'm not really sure that I'm doing this properly because I'm trying to stay on track while I'm sharing my screen. Probably not a great idea. Anyway, our design is to integrate what happens to us and create a personal perspective. And for fans of what I'd call the quantum or infinite lifetimes, this might be our life's true work and nature. It's a natural act of human design, largely unconscious, and it's a function until it's not, until it's the kind that we deliberately and thoughtfully undertake. And I call that acts of conscious integration. Now, this weekend, we all gathered to share what we know. And I've heard several of you speak on various pieces of this theme about our work and our story and how we become it or we don't, or we weave it or we don't, and how we come to where we are and how we come to who we are. So as usual, I am asking myself, what is useful to say to them about that? So as practitioners and teachers and trainers, we know a great deal about humans and how they learn about life and all that they learned and believe and then act upon and then ponder with us in our sessions and classes. We know a bit about how that happens, especially by about age 7. We know that it's to survive and to learn. We have neuro and cognitive learning, implicit, explicit learning, socio-emotional learning, neuroception, reconciliation. Yes, all of that. And it's important. But what I think I'm really interested in as we ponder a client's life predicament is all the ways we create meaning around the learning that we have done. And the part I'm especially interested in is what I call how we make sense of things. We integrate that learning and a sense of things into our identity and our life and our expectations. It's sort of like an outside version of the insula of the brain. It makes sense of all this incoming data, and we create story. And often we change the meaning or the story as we learn more. If we're lucky, we do. Or if we're doing acts of conscious integration, we do. We begin to see things differently, and then our life changes as the meaning-making changes. Life is just like that. And all those people we love, like Mike Dooley and people who do infinite possibility types of living, that's what they're talking about. The very meaning we've made is attracting and creating and shaping our experience. As practitioners, it's our work to help others that are having problems with what they've made meaning of. That is what we're doing most often. And to be honest, it's great that we can stand in that space for them, because all of us observe and react and judge and evaluate and catalyze or catalog and then file and retrieve and compare and contrast and create our action plans based on the past meaning we've made, aka what happened last time and how'd that work out. Our great file clerk in the sky is always retrieving information on earlier similar situations that it deems to be like this one, which is my concept of hashtag. There's a skillion, not a scallion, I see a typo. There's a skillion data bytes that are hashtagged in the great file room of our mind. Hashtag red, hashtag car, hashtag beach, hashtag the smell of suntan lotion. And it's all there. And every time we hit something, as Gwyneth Moss would say, out there, it triggers something in here that's been cleverly filed and hashtagged. So how we file all this stuff helps us connect the dots and interpret what we see and we hear and we feel and observe, and that ineffable sense about that. We synthesize it into what we deem useful. Or it could be an assessment of self and capabilities or options or even next best steps. That individual interpretive power is why a kiss is still a kiss and a smile is still a smile. But we all remember it differently, and we attach it to all sorts of different things. So, going back to our slides, maybe here is where we remind ourselves that meaning is not necessarily truth. It might be, but as often as not, it's not, right? It's merely a certain understanding that has been made around a certain something or an inanimate object or frightening experience or what I call a sensory bath data set. Mostly I just say thoughts on things, because isn't that how people really are and how they really experience life? Certain things. And the meaning they've made, and the idea that it might be true, especially the unexamined. So that's way before we even get into making meaning and words to describe that to other people about our created experience. It's our creative expression of our perceived meaning, but it has to go through a lot of gyrations before we're able to talk about it or offer it to somebody else. And these could be very simple things, like early versions of this would be maybe more childlike, just very simple truths like, well, that's not right. That is the meaning that they made and therefore their truth at the moment. Or it could be more layered and socialized, something like, coming to the meeting dressed that way was disrespectful. It's the meaning I made around it. Could be highly personal, something like, I'm never going to find love. There's something deeply off about me, and everybody knows it. How we integrate this lifetime of experience and meaning making, which is not necessarily true at all, and integrate it into our presenting personality or approach to the world, our thinking, our choices, and our behaviors. That's what I'm trying to get at when I call it the integration concept. And that's actually what I was thinking about this year when I was formulating how we would talk about C. And so I've decided that it's like this. We take our life experience, and it's a little bit like a factory. So our life experience pulls up to the big factory, and as you can see, what comes out the other side is in our brain. In this life, we're apparently a meaning-making factory. The raw material is life experience, or what happens to us, and the manufacturing and processing function in the middle is manipulating the information received with the tools we currently have on hand inside our little factory. It includes our past learning from the experience, our ability, our capability to retrieve and compare and contrast that we've experienced before, which has a lot to do with how unsettled we are or how grounded we are, right? Our capability. It includes our culture too, with all the rules and expectations and taboos and limitations. All of it's in there. Our ability, here's a key one too, our ability to delay action or satisfaction or rewards. That's all in the factory and the meaning making too. It shows up in our pacing, in our abilities to withstand the idea of I've got to have it in right now, or why I've got to have it in right now. All those things show up in our pacing. And our influences, past and present, and which among them, and who among them is observing us, because our behavior might be quite different by virtue of who is observing us. Also, the environment in which we're working or expressing at that time that we think and choose and act. But it's the impact of the meaning we make into our created personal story we make about ourselves and the world I'm most interested in sharing. And in its essence, I call it acts of conscious integration. Keyword there was conscious, right? Conscious integration. So let me show you what we came up for this. I hope you'll laugh. This, when Angela and I were talking about drawing, it was supposed to be a child's drawing of Rodin the Thinker. But very quickly, we devolved into cheekiness. And there you have a youngster trying to work it out with the famous COVID-friendly toilet paper. This is, however, really thinking about it. And that's what I was trying to get over as a child. So let's get real personal, because after all, it is me and I'm Jondi, and you know I'm going to go there, right? Let's look at life experience that was interpreted and made, and the meaning that we made is what I meant to say, into our story. Let's look at how that might progress. And you'll be glad to know that, yes, these are real stories, but no, they are not the worst stories. So I don't want to trigger anybody. Okay, so here's the life experience. As a child, I was raised with a rotating cast of characters. Temporary was learned to be a normal state, and next was a given. There was going to be a next. And my interpreted meaning that I made at a very young age was life is uncertain and I am inconvenient. Experience went on further. Mom's new place had a lot of rules, was the experience. And mom's new boyfriend had a lot of rules. And the meaning I made was, if you want to stay, mind the rules and be good enough to keep around. And life went on. And the experience was, mom always sides with new dad. They are a team. But the meaning I made was, I don't belong and I'm on my own. And life went on. And the facts and life experience were, I moved every year. And I was a perpetual new kid every year. And of course, we're referring to school. But the meaning I made, the interpretation I made, was that I have to keep proving myself worthy. And much later in life, I learned from my life experience how I was crushed by the one person I loved, the love of my life. And what I made meaning of was loving that much hurts too bad. So don't risk that again and stay in control. And so I think you can see how well that's going to work out, right? Well, yeah, that progressed a lot. So that was my life experience, and that's just some of them. And it isn't interesting how life will continue to bring you that same story until we've made something else out of it. Again and again and again until we get it. That's my conclusion. Now, recently, my brother Craig and I helped move our parents from their home of 32 years into a senior independent living complex. We did it at breakneck pace, and I'm really proud of us, and they're really happy, and everything's fine. But my story that I want to talk about today is that you find things doing that, and you have no way of knowing how it's going to affect you or when. So one of the final days, I found a large box of old letters to me, and I stayed up until 2 a.m. reading each one. Bourbon was involved. I cried a lot. I felt truly and totally miserable. I couldn't sleep. Because the meaning I'd made, reading through my life experience and feeling again, all that love that had been poured out for me in those letters was this. I had squandered love. I had squandered all those opportunities. Squandered. And for a grandchild raised with grandparents who narrowly survived the Great Depression, to squander was a cardinal sin of gigantic proportion. I immediately moved into healthy self-flagellation. I was kidding about the healthy part. Turned out I'm really good at doubling down. Why had I done that? And for what? Some vague idea of freedom, some foolhardy pursuit of self-realization, or a really sad rendition of that old song, My Way. Now I'm truly miserable. How could I ever redeem myself from these heavy conclusions? And was that even possible? So many of these people were gone. So many opportunities lost, gone forever. And the hundreds of Robert Frost-like walks in the woods, those roads less traveled. And now, where was I? Where's this here that I have come to, looking back on all this unfixable squandering? I had a few more things in my heart ungrieved, apparently, unresolved. And no wonder they kept showing up again and again and again. So to fix this, I was going to have to shift into any sense of neutrality or much less gratitude. I didn't know I was going to do it because there was an extraordinary amount of love that I had been given in my life. And honestly, it took a really long time. And hilariously, for those of you who are practitioners, wait for it. I thought I'd dealt with all that. But the truth, I have always found love. I guess I never knew it was hard to do. Maybe it's hard to keep or sustain, but it certainly wasn't hard to find. And I think about that even now. I do. Recently, it was an old boyfriend's birthday, and I hadn't seen him in years, although I had tried. I hadn't seen him for years because he said I made his head hurt. And I believe that. I probably did. Anyway, I pondered how much this man had meant to me and his contributions to my life experience from his. This is how we integrate wisdom, right? We borrow from somebody else that we respect or care about, if we can. And I tried to use that, what I'd learned from our time together. And I said, how do I take a lifetime of love and loss and integrate it into something I can use right now? It took some percolation and a lot of tapping. Finally, out of the hundreds of things gathered from this tempestuous relationship, I found a specific event. That's what tapping often does, clarifies and brings us a specific event. Here it was, the memory of the day he accused me of not knowing what I really loved. And I was dearly offended, not understanding his real question at all, and I foolishly dove off the cliff to prove him wrong. That would not be the first time, and it's never a great idea. Gauntlet thrown, I took up the challenge he set before me because he had said, I don't want to hear from you until you know what you really love. So I bought a new journal, and I started filling it up with a list of things I loved, and I filled it up, and I called him up triumphantly, and he said, what did you find? Now, that was hard to answer. I wasn't sure if it was a trick, and to be honest, this journal covered an awful lot of territory, zigzagging all over the planet that I now call home. From the way that air smells after a good summer rain to the rumble of elephants and the caress of breeze riffling through my hair to the smell of a new puppy's paws and the sweetness of a child melting into slumber in your arms or the capsizing rush of touching a lover's skin. The profound sweetness of freshly picked corn and the smell of tomato leaves. The intermingled smells of fresh laundry and the breeze flapping or fresh cut grass, the exquisite corals and pinks and the sunset and the possible blueness of the sea, the sting in our eyes and the lump in our throats as we let go of something we love, all these things. A book full, and I'm still integrating all those loves and continuing to add new ones. And this is a picture of one of the pages of that journal. That's the real deal. And it occurs to me, as I still add things, that we've no less days, as they say in the old gospel spiritual, we've no less days or journals to fill. This beloved man smiled as I recounted it all to him, and he was deeply and genuinely curious, and he was patient, and he listened to my list for the longest of times before at last shining a light on the true quest. He said, John D., it's important that you know what you really love. And his name hadn't been on the list. It took a while for all that to sink in and integrate, come to some new meaning about him and love and my story. And here's the new truth. I wasn't inconvenient. I had been loved often and well, and I still am. And that's my story. And so I had to do this. A little self-love. At last. Self-love. My arms embracing life. So I guess I better ask you now again, when you take your life experience and you have my life experience, my story, but it's yours now, do you embrace it like that? What is your story? I hope you will integrate all the love you can find from your life experience and put it into your story. Former preacher Rob Bell, who still rocks my world often, was talking about this, I think, when he spoke of the mystery at the heart of reconciliation of all things, embraced and graced. May you and your story be reconciled and embraced too, because we're all counting on one another to do that, aren't we? And our clients are counting upon us to show them how to do that too. Jean, could you play me something? We'll get it right, y'all. My friend Jean is on the case.
And in the end, the love you take is equal to the love you make.
my story, and you're my people.